This is Amarin's.
Welcome to episode 28 of my podcast. It's Tuesday, July 28, 2007. Today's episode is called Language, because this is Maori Language Week, which both celebrates and promotes the Maori language. 20 years ago, the Maori language was declared an official language in New Zealand, alongside English, which means that it could be used for a lot of official purposes, and most government agencies, for example, have a Maori name as well. Maori is both in our passports. Maori and English are both in our passports, unlike, say, the United States, which has English and French. In some areas, there are signs in Maori. It's not typical in most places, however. And it can be used for official purposes. It is taught in schools now, and it is generally promoted. Now, in the early part of the 20th century, early to mid part of the 20th century, the speaking of Maori and the teaching of Maori was actively discouraged, including in schools, where sometimes children were punished if they spoke Maori. Now, that wasn't always done at the hands of whitey either. In many cases, it was Maori themselves who discouraged the use of the language because they felt the way to get ahead was to speak English. And they were actually probably right at that time. In September of 1972, a petition with some 30,000 signatures was presented to Parliament asking simply that Maori be taught in schools, which is a pretty simple request if you stop to think about it. Well, a few years later, in 1987, the language was declared an official language, and a sort of a renaissance in the language began. Now, this is important because the Maori language had been in decline up until the 70s, and there had been real fears that the language would become extinct. In the years since then, the number of Maori speakers, fluent Maori speakers, has increased. Now, until relatively recently, there were only about 1 in 4 Maori were fluent in their own language, which is known as te reo Maori, and about 30,000-odd non-Maori New Zealanders were fluent in the language as well. But there's been a steady increase in the number of people who are fluent, and there also has been a steady increase in the number of people who understand at least a few phrases in the language as well, which is a good thing to see, because this means that there's been a resurgence in the language and a resurgence in interest in the language as well. Now, that hasn't entirely been without some resistance. When I arrived in New Zealand in 1995, of course, the official status was only, about 8 years old at the time, and there were a lot of people who were adamant that things had to be pronounced the old way. Now, over time, that's changed and mellowed somewhat because the correct pronunciations are used in the news bulletins, for example, and generally speaking, radio and television advertisers will use the correct spelling. The correct pronunciation. And so over time, it's become more and more common to hear the correct pronunciations rather than the old ones. But there was some resistance. And I have to say that the resistance that I saw was mostly, not exclusively, but it was mostly from more elderly people, shall we say, and perhaps mostly those who were born in the United Kingdom, especially the World War II generation. And my theory for that is just that when you get older, it's harder to learn a new language, and also there's that whole thing about change being difficult and so on. But it wasn't exclusively those people. There were also other people who resisted the change and didn't want to learn the language for whatever reason. Maybe they thought it was too hard. I don't know. But as time has passed, and it's now 20 years since Maori was made an official language, it has become much, much better situation. Maori is a fairly easy language to learn in that the pronunciations are consistent. There's no changing of vowels depending on where it appears and all that sort of thing. And it has the same vowels, but they're pronounced differently. It's a, e, I, o, u. So basically, it's short vowels. There are no long vowels in Maori. So sometimes Americans will say the word for the people, Maori, they'll say Maori, which is, of course, way incorrect. And my theory on why that is that very often you will see a line over the A. Now, when I was taught phonics back in primary school, we were taught that a line over vowel made it long, so A became A, and so that's how Maori came about. Only that's not what it means. A line over vowel in te reo Maori means that it's called a makron, and it means that the vowel has a longer stress. So it's not actually Maori, it's Maori. You see, it's just held a bit longer. But the thing is that the important thing, and this is true whether you live here or you're just a tourist, is that nobody's going to laugh at you for getting it wrong. If you try, you try your best, you might be corrected, somebody might help teach you different ways of saying the same thing, but nobody's going to lash out at you because you pronounced a word wrong. As a matter of fact, people, Maori people in particular, appreciate it when others try to use the language and try to pronounce things correctly. And it's really not that hard. The vowels, as I said, are consistent. No matter where you see them, they're always pronounced the same. The consonants are basically the same, except for two things. NG is pronounced like the last two letters of song, or thing, or something like that. But it can often appear at the beginning of a word. Now, I personally have a bit of trouble with that. But if you think about it in terms of song, it's a little bit easier. But if you just use N, people aren't going to hit you over the head or anything. The other is WH. Now, normally that's pronounced F, as in Frank. For example, there's a town in Northland, north of Auckland, called Whangarei, which is Whangarei. And that's how, in this part of the country, we pronounce it, Whangarei. But there are other parts of the country where they pronounce WH more like W and H. And it used to exist in English as well, so you didn't say whichever, you would say whichever. You wouldn't say whatever, you'd say whatever. And it's the exact same vowel sound, as I understand it, that is used by some people in some particular areas of the country. So they wouldn't say Whangarei, they'd say Whangarei, or something like that. I don't quite know. I haven't heard it enough to be able to imitate it. But the vast majority of people will pronounce WH as F. Now, the old people, the old pronunciation for Whangarei was Whangarei, which just sounds wrong to me whenever I hear it. And similarly, there is an area in the southwest corner of New Zealand called Taranaki. And some of the older people will say Taranaki. And it's not that, it's Taranaki. And the R is slightly trilled, slightly rolled. There's a mountain there called Mount Taranaki, and it's in Egmont National Park. And some people insist on calling the volcano Mount Egmont, even though it's not, and hasn't. It was only briefly called that, but it was at the right time for some people to be convinced that it was the only name it's had. Mount Taranaki, by the way, was a stand-in for Mount Fuji in Tom Cruise's film The Last Samurai, which was filmed in the Taranaki province primarily. A little trivia for you. So anyway, Māori is a fairly easy language to pronounce. I just have trouble learning any language these days, and my hope, it might be a bit ambitious to hope that I'm one day fluent in it, but I would like to at least know a few more phrases and a few more words than I do now, and hopefully one day I'll get there. But if you do come to New Zealand as a tourist, you know, by all means, give it a go. As I say, nobody's going to beat you over the head if you get it wrong. It's not that big a drama. But they do certainly appreciate it if you at least make the effort. And there are plenty of resources available on the web to teach you some basic words here and there. And if I think about it, I'll try to put some in the show notes, too. But I'm not going to say any more about it than that, because it starts to get into cultural areas, and I'm not qualified to talk about a lot of that stuff because I don't know it, and it's really not appropriate for me, both because I'm Pakeha, of European descent, and also because I'm a foreigner. I mean, I was born elsewhere. And I don't have the intuitive understanding that a lot of other people would have, and I just don't really want to go there, if you know what I mean. I'd rather leave that for somebody else, somebody who's more appropriate, which could be Nigel, actually, because I would like to talk more about Māori culture and other things about Māori, but I think it would be better if it's somebody who's born here, certainly, and also somebody with Māori ancestry would be better as well, because they're certainly going to know things and understand things that I wouldn't or couldn't. So that's all I want to say about language, and I'm going to now move on to the comments about episode 27, which was with Nigel, actually, and I haven't responded to these in writing yet, but I hope to get to that. First up was Archer, who said, I should say, first up was Archer, of course. Anyway, he said, I hope by now you are both over your colds. It was fun hearing Nigel again. I love his accent and loved hearing all the answers to the questions. You should have him on the podcast more often. Thanks, Archer. I would like to have him on the podcast more often. It's mostly just a matter of finding time, because I usually record these while he's still at work, and so we have to make a special time to record and all that, which isn't out of the question. It's just that there are barriers, is all I'm saying. Yeah, so that's that. And John Q. Public said, Hi, Arthur. Thanks for you and Nigel answering all my questions. I was totally engrossed by the discussion. you may not have similar personalities when one gets to know you both, but you both seem to have a gentleness, at least when you're talking with each other on the air. No grumpiness from Nigel came across at all. Arthur, I'm still amazed at your reaching out and deciding to start a new life in a new land with a new partner. I'm sure Nigel is worth it, but I think many would not have been willing to make the jump. As for me, I'm a retired educator living in the central United States who loves the gay podcasts. Thanks, John. Part of that is because in the podcast with Nigel, I realized I didn't know where John was from, actually. And it was mostly his questions that we were answering. Now, first, I wanted to add something to what we were saying in that podcast. Nigel mentioned after we were done, after everything was posted, that there was one other thing that I had trouble adjusting to when I first arrived in New Zealand, and that was tipping, or rather the lack of it, because you don't tip anybody in New Zealand. Part of that is because, say, restaurant workers, for example, are paid at least minimum wage or higher, in many cases a lot higher, so they don't need tips. You can give a tip for exceptional service if you really want to, but it's certainly not expected, it's certainly not required. And when I first got here, I had a bit of trouble with that because I was used to, in America, where you have to tip, where the staff are paid less than minimum wage, and if you don't tip, they don't want to have any hope of getting any decent money out of the deal. It was really hard for me not to tip at first. Also, it's quite common here, if you go to a cafe or restaurant, that when you're done, you leave the table, you walk up to the register and pay. They don't give you a check on the table like you get in America. Now, I realized that right away. Oh, and also in some places, you order first and then sit down and they bring it to you. That's usually at lunch. I've never seen that at dinner. That's usually more like a cafe sort of place. And that part I sometimes had trouble with because I wasn't sure if it was a place where you sat down and ordered at the table or if you had to order at the counter and they brought it to you or what the story was. But you eventually adjust, and it's like anything else. When what we humans tend to do is if we don't know what to do, we look around and see what others are doing and we model our behavior based on what they're doing. And it was as simple as that, really. But as to John's point in the comment about being amazed that I decided to start a new life and new land and all that sort of thing, if I stopped to think about it, I would probably be amazed too. But I don't stop to think about it anymore because it is just second nature now after all these years. And at the time, it didn't seem like that big a deal. And part of that was because I'd reached a point in my life where I was ready to move on. And I mentioned that I'd considered moving to San Francisco, or somewhere anyway, because it wasn't that I hated Chicago, because I never did. I was ready for something different and a totally different environment and so on. And so in that sense, it was lucky that I met Nigel when I did, because otherwise I might not have been willing to do it. At that point in my life, I also have a spirit of adventure. And I've always been curious about different countries and different people and so on, and wanted to find out more. And in the months prior to meeting Nigel, I'd been going through a lot of traveling. I'd been to Germany, I'd been to Quebec, I'd been to San Francisco for the first time. I'd been traveling around a bit. And so the idea of going to the other side of the world didn't faze me in the least. And because everything fell into place relatively easily in terms of finding a job and getting my paperwork sorted out and all that, it wasn't a big drama for me to come here. If it had been harder to come here, I might have, who knows what would happen. I mean, I might have gotten cold feet, I don't know. But because everything just fell into place the way it needed to when I needed it to, I never really stopped to think about the enormity of what I was doing. And nobody else gave me any reason to. Most of my friends were supportive and I don't know if understanding is quite the right word, but they didn't raise any objections. I did have a few friends who would say things like, "Oh, you'll be back," or a couple, you know, the old "I'll give it 6 months" sort of thing. But as Nigel said, if we were together for 50 years and broke up, somebody would say, "I told you it wouldn't last." So, I mean, with some people, you just can't win. And most of my friends and my family, certainly, even if they didn't understand why I was doing it, were supportive of it. And so I didn't get any negativity on that end of things. And as I say, since I was sort of predisposed to making a move, to me, it wasn't really that big a drama to make a move. And it's only in hindsight, looking back on it, when I realize what a huge move it really was. But as I also said, now that I've been here so many years, it just doesn't seem like that big a drama anymore. And yeah, that's really all I can say about that now, I guess. But thanks again, John and Archer, and thanks for your comments. Always feel free to leave a comment on my blog, amarins.blogspot.com, or send an email to me at amarins@yahoo.com. Right, and coming up soon, I'm hoping to have a new guest, one who hasn't been on before, and we'll see how that goes. I'm not sure yet what day that's going to be, if it's going to be this coming Friday or the following Tuesday, but I suppose you'll find out when you find out. So, that's it for this Tuesday edition. I'll talk to you soon. Have a good week, everybody. Bye. I'm